Good evening. I'm your host, Aaron Ripmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast number 366 for Sunday, January 24th, 2016, are Brad Coates.
Greetings, Disney fans.
Kevin Crossman.
Happy 2016 and a happy 16th and a half birthday to Disneyland.
And Ryan Dreichler.
Hi, everybody.
So tonight on the podcast, we're going to be talking about whirlwind touring of Disneyland. Sort of, you know, how to attack the California parks if you've only got a very limited amount of time. But before we get to that discussion, I do want to take a moment and remind you that the Diz Dads podcast is sponsored by Fantastic Memories Travel and its Mouse Master Travel Group. The Mouse Master Travel Group focuses on Disney destination vacations, and Mouse Master agents would love to take care of the stressful parts of vacation planning so you can focus on the fun. You can check us out at mousemastertravel.com. Let's start out with what probably is the secret dream of many a Diz Dad. Somebody else is paying for you to go to Southern California, right? You're traveling for work. So you've got a free trip basically, but you got to work. You can squeeze in an extra day, maybe at the beginning, maybe at the end, one way or the other, you can get one extra day out of it. My question for you is, how do you attack the Disneyland parks, Disneyland and Disney California Adventure, really the whole resort? What do you do to get the most out of the experience when you've only got one day? And I guess what we'll start with is just kind of the big picture. What's the strategy? And so I'm going to turn to Kevin first. And Kevin, what's your strategy when you've got just one day and you want to get the most out of a day at Disneyland?
Well, I think that the approach is really very similar to what you would have in any sort of normal kind of vacation experience. What you want to do is you're going to Disneyland because you want to have fun and you want to maximize your fun, but not do some crazy things that make you not have fun. So it'd be great to experience every single attraction in both parks in one day, and it might be physically possible, but it probably won't be fun by the end of the day. So for me, if I'm there by myself, I want to try to do the things that maybe I don't get a chance to when I am with other people. And so really it's going through my personal checklist of my favorite attractions and then working through a strategy on how to attain all of that.
Okay. Okay. And Brad, how about you? What are you doing sort of big picture wise to figure out how to get into as much as possible, do as much as you want to do at Disneyland in one day?
Well, I think especially on a condensed experience like this, more than ever before, it's critical to plan ahead and come up with some type of a touring plan that you have in mind. I think it was well said that you don't think in terms of getting to do everything, but you need to make a clear list of the few must-do rides that are in your mindset that you must do, and then make sure that you maximize in that process fast passes, and especially at Disneyland and California Adventure, even more so than you experience out in Disney World, single rider lines, if it's possible, because if some really solid rides have single rider lines, you could save a ton of time if you can do that.
Okay. Okay. Good ideas. Good ideas. How about you, Ryan? Anything different in the way that you would kind of prepare for this?
I think I would just build on what Kevin and Brad have said and say it's really just about focus. If you've got a finite amount of time, there's a huge amount of stuff condensed into a small area, and so you have to narrow it down to figure out what you can do in that time frame or what you want to do in that time frame. And I think that first area of focus is, where are you going to spend your time? Are you going to park hop or just stay in one park? Because that will have ramifications for everything else.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. So let's assume that we actually got in the night before. So we have the chance to make a rope drop to get there when the park opens. One thing, though, that we probably ought to make sure that people understand is Disneyland, we want to remind them, works a little bit differently than Walt Disney World does when it comes to early morning. Walt Disney World, you're pretty much guaranteed that at least one park and probably at least three are going to open at 9 a.m. It's not always the case at Disneyland.
That's true. It's usually just a set schedule on which one of the parks is open early.
Okay, so you're going to have one park open early, and if you're not staying on property, you're not going to have access to that early opening, especially if you're only on a one-day ticket, right? Because you don't even get the magic morning that comes with a multi-day ticket.
That's correct.
Yep.
So that might mean, for example, that you might not have access to Disneyland until 10 a.m. It's not unusual in the off-season for that late opening. But benefit of the doubt, let's say you timed it well, you get a 9 a.m. opening. So, Brad, what are you doing first thing when you get to the park? What is your initial destination?
Well, normally I would, when I've done a one-day kamikaze trip to Disneyland, I've always tried to do a Disneyland first and then try to do California Adventures second. But if the park opens early that morning to California Adventure instead of Disneyland, then I'm going to go straight into California Adventure and get over to Radiator Springs Racers, if that's on your real short list. If that one's not, then probably Toy Story Midway Mania or possibly Soarin'. But I would normally, if that was the case, I would probably just do the one ride, maybe two. Might hit Radiator Springs first and then hit Soarin' on my way out of the park and get over to Disneyland as fast as I can to hit it right when it's opening up to maximize my time over there.
All right. So Brad's idea is get the one or two things you have to do at DCA out of the way and then make your way over to Disneyland. Ryan, do you agree with that strategy?
I would agree with that if the person has a hopper. So I'm going to assume that the person does, and so I would kind of build on Brad's strategy. I would go in, rush to Radiator Springs. I would get a fast pass for it, and then get in the standby line, ride it, and if I've gotten there early enough, my fast pass window should open up just as soon as I get off, so I can do it two times in a row. It was. Because you're not subject to the same fast pass limits as you are in the East Coast parks, you know, there's a big benefit to getting fast passes early because the next one opens up as soon as you use the first one.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's you still can't do the massive collection thing anymore. They do, you know, enforce return times, but it's still, you know, a little tighter window. And when you've got a long day, multiple fast passes is certainly a reasonable expectation. All right. So how about you, Kevin? What are you tweaking about the initial plan?
Can I make one small change there?
Sure,
too?
Sure. Go ahead.
The one thing that I would do that's maybe a little bit slightly different than Brad. So I would do the two rides, but they would be Radiator Springs Racers, and then they would be California Screamin'. I love Toy Story and I love Soarin', but both of those are things that I can do in East Coast parks that I'm in on a regular basis. So I'd probably skip those, even though the Soarin' out there has already been upgraded and has digital projection.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, why do Toy Story? And I would agree from that perspective that Toy Story isn't one of the attractions that I love doing solo, because part of the fun of it is the person sitting next to you.
Yeah.
And so I would agree. I'd much rather spend that time on California Screamin'.
Which does have a single rider line. Soarin' does too out there as well, but California Screamin' is great. The single rider line,
yeah, can it's probably tend to move. One of the best single rider lines, and the only reason I mentioned Toy Story and those others is that it all comes down to whatever that person says is their must-dos.
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely.
I'm with you. I wouldn't do Toy Story by myself, but somebody else might.
All right. So, what's your priority, Kevin?
Well, I think that what I would want to do is definitely get there at Rope Drop and try to, like I said, have your list of attractions and try to knock them out as much as I can so that we have plenty of time for relaxing later in the day. One of the things that I always try to do is figure out which attractions I'm going for and maybe try to pull a fast pass on my way to another one. So in Disneyland, what often we'll do at Rope Drop is I'll pull the fast pass for Star Tours on my way to Space Mountain in standby, you know, the single, you know, regular rider line, or maybe at DCA pull a Soarin' fast pass on my way to a single rider for Radiator Springs or something in this kind of case. So that way I've got that fast pass, you know, kind of locked in, the time's locked in, especially for a ride that may not have an easy way to have a single rider or something along those lines. So, I mean, that would kind of be my approach. And it sort of depends on what you want to do. And like, for example, if I pull the Star Tours Fast Pass and then I ride Space Mountain, there's probably a few minutes there before my Fast Pass time comes up. So that would give me an opportunity to do something else in that section of the park. Maybe go over to Matterhorn and do single rider, or do the submarines or Autopia if I'm feeling adventurous.
All right. So that's a good tip there. You know, really leveraging your location and taking advantage of the sort of fast pass along the way and combining that with those single riders. And if you can kind of alternate the fast passes and single rider lines, you kind of get the best of both worlds a little bit.
Yeah, so, you can get a lot done that way because, you know, this early entry time is your prime time to be able to, you know, have very low lines on everything, low crowds. So you're not having to try to navigate through giant crowds to cross the park or, you know, something along those lines.
Exactly. Yeah. And the one key is that, especially if you're using that early morning hour, you know, because like I said, I'd go to California first, but make sure you don't get bogged down doing too much, because you want to get over to Disneyland right when its gate is opening at its regular time, so that you don't get caught behind the wave and start hitting longer wait times. I would add one thing on the fast passes. Unfortunately, just a reminder to those who may not go, have been but don't go often, they have changed the policy where you used to be able to pull a fast pass and then go back whenever you wanted. So just be careful that you don't start pulling fast passes and then you find yourself running back and forth across the park. You know, spending 20 minutes to save five, you know.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. But you gotta use all of it to maximize.
And I might suggest that maybe a little bit of a contrarian view of this. I would probably be more likely to, if I had a park hopper, do more Disneyland stuff right in the morning and save my DCA stuff for the afternoon, because I might want to enjoy an adult beverage with my lunch, or maybe go bar hopping in the afternoon. And of course you can't do that at Disneyland. So that would be something to consider as a touring plan as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, those are definitely different considerations. And one thing that I might've been tempted to do is, you know, as long as I'm there at opening and particularly if I'm going to head over to DCA and, you know, do Radiator Springs right away, I might actually sidetrack and go, you know, maybe even, go immediately over towards the Grizzly Peak area and grab a World of Color Fast Pass, because that one's not going to count against me. And so, you know, I can grab that and know that I don't have to give up a chunk of time in the evening, or as big a chunk of time in the evening, to get a decent place to watch World of Color and still get to see the show.
Yeah, especially the show stuff. It was really advantageous with it as a single person because, yeah, you don't have your whole family in tow. You can decide what your limit is in terms of how much you wait. And if you really want that good spot, you know, maybe you hang out for a little while, where if it was with your kids, maybe they wouldn't have the stamina to do that.
And most likely you kind of have, that's another one of those things, pre-planning things, you kind of have to figure out which night shows are the critical ones, because it can be done to see the fireworks and to see World of Color on certain nights, but it's hard. It's very, very hard to pull it off effectively. So it's almost, you're going to probably pick one or the other.
Yeah, no, that's true. And that's actually a good point, because, you know, they're both new shows. And so it's a hard choice these days. And we'll talk in a little bit here as we, you know, work through our day about which one, you know, you would choose. But we talked a little bit about the plan for the morning. So I guess the next segment of the day we'd look at is, you know, what you're going to do with your afternoon. How are you going to handle that, you know, point when it's getting more crowded, it's getting hotter, you're getting hungry. So what do you do at the middle of the day? And Ryan, we'll let you start us off.
So this is a point where I would probably be tempted to go pretty commando. So if it was my one day trip out there, food is going to be a lower priority than other things. So after I've done my California Adventure must-dos, I would be hopping over to Disneyland. I might grab something, some sort of quick service that I could eat very quickly. But my focus is on going to be attractions. And I would probably start by going around and doing the Matterhorn and the submarines.
Okay, so you're gonna go over and do those attractions that maybe load a little more slowly and tend to back up, and get those taken care of.
With the main focus being starting with the things that I can't do anywhere else. So sure. There's no subs anywhere on the East Coast, so can't do that. And while I like the Disneyland versions of a lot of attractions better than I like the East Coast versions, I would rather do something I can't do than experience a better version of something that I can do.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, so how about you, Brad? What are you going to do with your afternoon?
Well, and I would point out, because you made a very good point there, with especially with those two particular rides. Those are – I like the idea of trying to hit things that you can't see at the other parks. But those two particular rides are very slow loading, and the longer you wait, the worse they are going to get. There is a single rider on the Matterhorn, but there is no single rider on the subs. And so you want to do those as early as you can, or you're going to get – or as late as you can, because you're going to get stacked up. But I would then – but talking particularly about afternoons to maximize, I totally agree on the quick service. One of the great things about Disneyland as opposed to Disney World is it has – probably has better food and it's quick service than the majority of the sit-down restaurants. I mean, they're quick service. They've got some really nice places and food you can get in a to-go and eat as you're walking and as you're moving and eat in the line. And so definitely maximize your time there. You're really eating for sustenance, not for a dining experience on a one-day trip. So, and then I would try to focus on maybe some of the rides that would give me an opportunity to get in out of the sun so my body can restore a little bit, get maybe Pirates, or if you can do the single rider, do Indiana Jones, Enchanted Tiki Room, if that's on your list of things that you must do. You know, find those things that will give you an opportunity to get in out of the sun and out of the heat, and be able to just relax a little bit and recharge your batteries.
Okay. How about you, Kevin? Are you going to take a similar approach, or is this where you head back over to DCA and you know, slow down at the Trattoria for a little bit?
Yeah, again, it depends a lot on what you want to do. If you want to knock out a bunch of rides, great, go for it. But if it's me, I might be inclined to maybe go over to, say, Trader Sam's. They open at 11, so, and it's usually not very crowded in the early afternoon. Get a little lunch, get a little drink. That's kind of a festive atmosphere, and you can make friends easy in that kind of setting if you're there by yourself. So that could be a good option. And then the rest of the afternoon, I would probably be trying to focus on things like shows, parades, just kind of relaxing. So, you know, I'm not necessarily a parade guy myself, but if I was hanging out and eating some ice cream or whatever, and I had a nice little spot to sit on and do some people watching, that might be a good afternoon for me by myself, where I wasn't being dragged by the rest of my family to do this or do that. I could just hang out and do my own thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, is this is where you can leverage the fact that, you know, you don't have to go hit every Fantasyland attraction because you know, your kid insists. You can do things, you know, a little differently than you might normally because you're by yourself.
Exactly.
You've gotten through, you've done your lunch, you've done your afternoon. Kevin's the first one who said, you know, we'll get outside of the park itself a little bit and enjoy Trader Sam's. This is a good opportunity to do that early. One thing I think it's important to point out too, especially for people who are less familiar with Disneyland, is that much more so than at Walt Disney World, there's a pretty big difference in the the crowd flow, depending on whether you're in the parks on a weekday or a weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you're there on a weekday, then you're going to see a marked jump in the crowd around dinner time or after, because you've got those pass holders who are local, who can, you know, stop by after work. It's not something that happens as often, I don't think, at Walt Disney World. But you do see on a number of attractions measurable jumps in the crowd levels sort of right around 5 o'clock.
Especially on Friday.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Friday's crazy, yeah. That is such a good point, because when you're talking, what is it now, 1.5 million pass holders, annual pass holders that are locals, most of them, it makes a huge problem. And that's one of the key reasons why I say, if it's early morning, go to California Adventure. If that's where it has it, take advantage of it. But if you're going to start your day, focus on Disneyland, because I don't know about you, Kevin and Ryan. I know, Aaron, you've only been there you've been there once or twice now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But for you guys have been there more. My experience has been the Disneyland park tends to get far more congested than the California Adventure, other than just a couple of hot spots in California Adventure. It just doesn't – it's definitely closer now, but it's still definitely bigger. So that's why I try to get into Disneyland, pump it out before we hit it, the 5 o'clock time, and start getting hammered, and then try to get over to California Adventure.
Actually, you get hammered after you get to DCA.
Good point. I don't know. Somebody else going to Trader Sam's right off the bat. I'm a little concerned.
Our experience was definitely that particularly by Friday afternoon, Disneyland was much, much more crowded, to the point that the week that we were there, by Friday afternoon, you couldn't even walk down Main Street. And so we just wound up leaving and going to the beach. For the afternoon. But yeah, we saw huge differences between the parks and between different times of day and day of week.
Yeah. And so that's just one of those things to keep in mind, because even going solo, those are going to have an impact on you. And in particular, because those attractions that are most impacted tend to be those adult-friendly attractions. You know, the attractions that see the big leaps in wait times. I mean, you know, it's not unusual for Space Mountain, for example, to double in wait time between 1 p.m. and 6 p.m. And I think a good chunk of that is an influx of adults who come into the park after work.
It's also the best version of Space Mountain.
Well, I mean, it's a popular attraction, absolutely,
yeah,
and that's kind of the point, right, is that know you want to do it, so you want to take that into account when you're figuring it out. All right, so we've gotten our afternoon. We're going to gear up for the evening. So this is your choice now. Everybody's going to make their own choices, but what, given your choice, it's your trip, it's your one day. So where are you spending your evening and why, and how are you going to kind of make your decisions about dinner and show and all that kind of thing? So it's Kevin's turn to go first.
So it might depend a little bit on kind of whether fireworks are happening that night or not and some of that kind of stuff. Certainly for the next many months, there will be no Fantasmic, which for some of us might afford a nice opportunity to relaxingly wander that side of the park without a million people per square inch, like it always is normally with Fantasmic.
Right. Yeah.
So I would be trying to, you know, either try maybe at dinner time, try to do a bunch of shopping while people are eating, get that out of the way or whatever. But in the evening part of it, in between that and whatever my nighttime spectacular is, maybe try to do some wandering around Adventureland, New Orleans Square, where the light in the evening is very charming and atmospheric and things like that.
See, and that's a great example of leveraging something that your kids would probably never put up with, but it's a nice opportunity by yourself.
Yep.
All right. So Brad, what are you going to do with your evening?
Well, I think that right there was a lot what I would be doing too. The one thing I would mention for me, like I said before, you really have to decide which nighttime show you're going to do. And in the past, that was a little bit easier because I've been to so many times and seen so many of the fireworks. They're great. They're always amazing. But World of Color is just a phenomenon. I love World of Color. But I got to tell you, after going out last fall and seeing the new 60th the Paint the Night Parade and the new fireworks with all the laser projection involved in all over the park, I would be focused on being, like I said, I would go evening. I would head to California Adventure. And then towards the end of the day, I would be getting back and getting ready for those particular shows. And I agree. It's kind of nice not having to worry about how to figure in Fantasmic. I love Fantasmic, but it's actually kind of a blessing to not have to figure out how to do both and where I'm going to sit to get a halfway decent view of either one. So
sure. Sure. All right. So Ryan, what are you doing with your evening?
So when I left off, I was in kind of near Tomorrowland. I'm going to amend my prior thing to say I will have grabbed a Space Mountain Fast Pass on the way in. So my evening would be riding Space Mountain with that Fast Pass. Then I will walk back, get on the monorail, and I will wait so I can ride up front. And that's something that – because that's something you can't do anywhere else again.
Right, right.
I would take that ride up front in the monorail out into Downtown Disney. Probably stop for pizza on the way back in. There's a pizza place that's pretty good that I enjoy. And then I would head back into Disneyland and walk around, follow kind of Kevin's path through New Orleans Square, potentially ride Pirates with the intention of starting to meander back towards Main Street, probably an hour before depending on how the crowd level, an hour before the fireworks and the parade so that I could see the fireworks and paint the night.
Yeah, because again, there's one of those benefits of being solo. It's easier to find a parade spot and a fireworks spot for one than it is for a family of four or five.
Exactly. Yeah, and you don't have to worry. Go ahead.
And I'm 6 foot two, so I can usually see over people.
you're that guy, huh?
Thanks. Yes, yes. I can make my own spot pretty easily.
That's right.
All right. So now I'm going to throw a curveball at you all, and I'm going to say, all right, imagine the same scenario. You've got one day at Disneyland. You're trying to fit in as much as you can. But this time, your whole family is there. You're in town for a family wedding, and you can squeeze in an extra day before the wedding festivities start or, you know, after the wedding stuff is done. You've got a day before you have to hit the road. So we'll go around. And we don't necessarily have to go through exactly the day parts quite the same way, but I think what I want to do is really talk about kind of ways that you might change things up if you were doing this with your whole family with you instead of just solo. And Ryan, I'll start it back through you this time. How are you going to start your morning with the whole family and trying to satisfy what you know your family's interests are?
So our morning would likely be very similar. My kids haven't been to Disneyland when Cars Land was built. And so, you know, I've had the opportunity to do the solo trip without them. So I know that would be their first priority because that's the part of the park that they've never had the chance to experience. So we would be ticking that off first. Kids do like California Screamin', so we would probably do that, and then we would head back over to Disneyland. Things would be – I think a lot of the things that we would do would be very similar. We would be trying to potentially even add in more rides, and we would need to figure out what things to drop. And I think the things that would likely fall out are things like the ride up front on the monorail where you potentially have to wait a long time for a couple-minute ride that results in a very long walk back to get back to where you were. If you have to loop through the one thing that I would throw out as a tip, which we learned from a friend who was out there on a trip with a friend a while ago, is I would leverage my kids once we got into the Magic Kingdom.
Okay.
And here's how I would do it. So what our friend did, and she's just a very nice talkative person, is she walked up to a cast member and said, look, we're here for one day. We've been to the Magic Kingdom a bunch of times, and we're trying to figure out what we should do. What should we do? And kind of talked through the cast member, and the cast member actually wound up walking them to the front of a bunch of different rides so they could get everything in.
Oh, wow.
So I would try and leverage my kids, who are very kind of friendly, and get them to go talk about their love for Disney and just talk to cast members, and maybe we get something magical, maybe we don't. But it never hurts to try for things like that, because you know they may say, hey, you've only got a couple hours. Here's a fast pass to Thunder Mountain, or here's a fast pass to Space Mountain, because you really shouldn't miss that here.
That's interesting. Good.
You attract more bees with honey.
Exactly.
Don't be that tourist screaming and yelling.
Yep.
I paid money. Let me to the front.
All right. So Kevin, what are you going to do differently with the family in tow in the morning?
So first of all, if this is your first trip to Disneyland, your one day is probably not a good option. But that being said, I think what I would try to do is for each member of the family, see if there's one or two things, attractions, shows, experiences, whatever, that they want to do, and maybe a food item of sort. So maybe a favorite restaurant or a favorite snack. See if there's a nice way to sort of bundle all that stuff together so that everybody gets at least one special thing for their trip, for the day. And set the expectation that we're not going to be able to do everything. We have to, you know, pick and choose and all that. So that way everybody gets their own special moment. Hopefully you prioritize your kids' special moments over yours in terms of the order of things or whatever, but you know, things like that. So, and potentially if you're in a family where you can split up to accomplish that, that might be an option so that you're efficient with everything. I think that sometimes there's a good reason to sort of stick together and maybe be less efficient about things. Your one day visit is probably not the best day for that sort of thing. So splitting up might be a better option than it might otherwise normally be.
Okay.
And hopefully what we're talking about is that the parents don't split off from the kids, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess it depends on the age of the kids at a certain point, but generally speaking, yes, I would agree.
Hey kids, Redwood Creek Trail's right over there. See you in an hour.
On the plus side, it's close enough that you could go to a different park.
That's true.
Leave them in there and hop on off.
I can't say I've never left my kids at the Redwood Creek Challenge Trail and gone and gotten a beverage, but I don't think we ever left the park. That's a different matter.
You're five. It's time to be on your own. A little more independence is needed.
All right. So, Brad, how about you? What are you going to do differently with the kids on board?
Sorry, I've been scribbling. I had to mark through my plan. You guys make me feel like a terrible father now. My plan was to bribe my wife to take the kids, go do their thing, and I'd go do my single day thing. No, I'm just kidding. That's exactly. It really comes down. A lot of it comes down to the age of your kids, and their level of comfort on what they want to do. But I love what Kevin said. That'd be what we do. We would approach the first thing you do is make your must-dos, right? Well, this time it would be, okay, go around the room. What is your must-do? And then what is your must-do? What is that feature that's going to make this special for you? And then try to build around those things. You still kind of do the parks the same way, but you make that decision based on who wants to do what, and that'll change your paths and stuff. You do have to kind of pay attention, especially if the kids are younger, to make sure that you kind of do your best to intersperse those sit down things if that's what they want to do, so they get a little bit of a, because leaving the park and taking a nap and coming back like a lot of us do with kids is probably not a good plan when it's your only day. So you just got to kind of give them those breaks as you go along. If you got kids that are older or kids that are comfortable, I still would say, single rider lines actually work for our family, work really good. But that's mainly because my kids are older and they've been so many times. They really don't care if they're sitting in the car with me again. They just want to ride the ride.
Right. And that's, like I said, with older kids, you can do that at least somewhat. But you know, if the idea is here, you know, like Ryan's situation where the kids haven't actually been there since Cars Land's opened, you know, you want to be there with
it's
them
all, yeah, when they experience that. You got to make that must-do thing where you're all do it together. And then if they're younger, like Kevin said, that's what we always did when we were younger. We were blessed because our two kids kind of split off. My youngest seemed to like to ride the same kind of things that my wife did. And then my oldest wanted to ride the things that I rode. So we just would kind of split and come back together for major things and it worked out.
All right. So there's your kind of basic approach in the morning. So what's going to happen the rest of the day that's a little different? What kinds of things do you really need to prioritize at Disneyland? For kids, and let's assume for a minute that we've got kids who don't know Disneyland. They haven't experienced Disneyland like most of your kids have. So what are you going to prioritize to make sure that they get a positive, memorable experience of Disneyland, even though it's a relatively short visit? And Ryan, I'll let you start out because I think you've kind of maybe been put in the position of thinking about this a little more immediately recently.
Yeah, the thing that there's things where it wouldn't necessarily work for me to say everybody pick your favorite ride because I know what they would pick and it would be a great day, but they would wind up missing out on things that would be, you know, really great experiences that afterward they would be really thankful they had. So things like the animators area, that's a great area. I don't know that they would necessarily pick that out on their own. So I think we would look for opportunities to do that. Just going to those special, really, really amazingly themed areas. I mean, again, the kids aren't going to say, oh, we want to go walk around New Orleans Square. But once they actually get in there and see the shops and stuff, and I mean, we would go to Pirates and then walk around that. It's a matter of helping them experience those things and kind of talking them through a lot of that stuff. There would be a lot of excitement for my kids, particularly my son, on Disney history things. So there would probably be a lot of discussion about things like that and tying that into it. So we would kind of be not torn between, but be dividing our time between kind of bigger e-ticket rides and just themed experiences that might be a little different than what they're used to.
Okay. And Kevin, how about you? What are you going to do to kind of make sure your kids get the things that are most important to them out of it without compromising your experience either and in a short period of time?
Well, if this is a first time visit and the kids are young, you definitely want to be going to, you know, rope drop early, get there early and go to Fantasyland and try to get as much stuff done. And you know, depending on the day, you can actually get pretty much everything done in Fantasyland in an hour. If you're, you know, do it one by one. And obviously Peter Pan is the key one to do knock out first there. Think that, you know, the other thing I would be thinking about, and I think Ryan's point is real interesting about thinking about places you can take the kids that they may not be really lobbying for, but you know, maybe this is your pick to show them something that you've enjoyed in the parks before or heard about or whatever. But the other thing too, that probably is a big consideration if it's a family, you're probably spending less time in the day shopping than you might if it was a part of a multi-day trip. And that just may have to be one of those priorities. Spending a lot of time shopping may not be the priority if you're trying to have the whirlwind tour and at least get a taste of each of the different lands in one or both of the parks you're trying to go to, or you let the shopper go and do their own thing while the rest
while
of
everybody else is on rides.
Do that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, the other piece to that is depending on how old your kids are, the shops are going to be the last thing that closes. So you can do attractions until the park closes and then go shop. So you don't necessarily have to take away from your time. It depends on I think how driven you are and how to the point of exhaustion your kids can go. But you don't have to exclude shopping. There's ways to fit it in outside of the normal day of doing things.
Yeah, because like the Emporium, it'll stay open, an hour or two, even after the scheduled park close for shopping. It's an hour, I think. And then Downtown Disney is open usually later for you to shop as well. So you can always squeeze it in at the end. That's a good point.
Disney's usually pretty happy to take your money if you're willing to give
it
to
them. I'm confident they're always happy to take your money.
Yeah, I was just thinking with kids, it would be hard to do that. That would be a long day for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a long day.
So, Brad, what are you going to do differently with the kids in tow on that one-day trip?
Well, I one of them I kind of already mentioned, and that was to make sure you're breaking that day up to for exactly what Kevin just mentioned. They're going to be exhausted. It's going to be wear them out. I mean, it's just the emotion as well as just the physical walking. And so make sure you get places where you can sit down. This is one place where I would say the exception when it comes to dining. One of the tricky things with having kids there, and especially as you laid it out, Aaron, kids that maybe it's their first time or haven't, they don't get to go all the time. Character meet and greets is huge. That was always just, I've got stacks of character books with signatures, you know. Now, it's been years since they've purchased one now, but back in the day, they got it every year. Doing character meet and greets when you're there one day, the amount of time you would burn through so much of your day.
Oh, sure.
To get to see two decent characters. So this is one time where I would say, figure out which characters are the ones that they would enjoy the most. And then do your research and figure out where those characters are possibly in a dining where they have a character dining experience, and get them into those character dining experience. And in fact, in that situation, I wouldn't pick my restaurant based on which one I thought had the best food, because they're kids. They don't care. They're just going to go straight to the kids area and eat chicken nuggets anyway. So it's not like it matters. Pick the one that has the characters that they want the most, and you'll get a lot more bang for your buck that way. And you can kind of knock out the meal and the characters, and at least they'll get some of that interaction with characters that way.
All right. Yeah, that's a good point. And that's a different kind of leveraging your time that you end up doing with the kids. Cause if you hit a character meal, you can knock out 3, 4, 5 character meet and greets kind of, while you're dining. So you make double use of the time. And I think I would add, too, that along similar lines of making sure that the kids get enough rest, they don't get overwhelmed by it. You know, this is a situation where I think that I would be very tempted to maybe choose two things at California Adventure that are absolute must do, probably Radiator Springs and California Screamin', and then spend the rest of the time in Disneyland, just because you don't have nearly the spread between attractions. California Adventure is still a little more compact than we're mostly used to at Disney World, but much more spread out than Disneyland. And I think that it's less tiring at Disneyland just because you get sort of more opportunities broken up in between. So you get more chances to kind of take that short break sitting down while you go on.
That's good. Yeah,
one of the other things I was thinking about, Brad was talking earlier about, nighttime spectaculars. And, you know, one of the things that might be an option with a family after a long day is maybe it wouldn't be such a bad idea to hang out for the parade and the fireworks. You sort of got two for one in terms of your spot that you've staked out. And again, know your kids. Can they sit there? Can you entertain them somehow? And it'd be nice if it wasn't just with your phone. Have dad or whoever run to the popcorn and come back with supplies and, you know, like that. But they're going to be tired by the end of the day. They're sitting there in the hub area someplace or whatnot. And then they can see the paint the night parade as well as the fireworks. And then maybe something afterwards when all that stuff is done. That would be a nice special way to end, a whirlwind, especially if it's the first experience.
Sure. All right. So anything else that you would do differently if you had kids along with you for this one-day whirlwind trip?
I would probably do less drinking.
Probably true.
Yeah. I would just switch what you're drinking.
Right. Yeah. More focus on staying hydrated.
So, and I'm trying to think of it, like the one thing that I if I had just one day there, and we haven't really talked about this, but the thing that that could tie into what you're doing at night is the room that you're staying in. Like, are you staying there or are you staying off property? If it's a one day trip, I would probably splurge for an expensive hotel room, maybe at Grand Californian with a view, potentially, so you could go in and see World of Color, particularly if the kids were going to be too tired for to do it. So looking at, because you can have rooms that are overlooking nighttime spectaculars, I might look at doing something like that, because it's just a one night splurge.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense, and I think that is a good example of something that you might do differently on, you know, this one night splurge trip with the kids than if you were traveling solo, because traveling solo you might be more inclined to, you know, choose the cheapest hotel that you could find just across the street on Harbor Boulevard, whereas with the kids, you know, that becomes a worthwhile splurge for one night because you get really an extra big chunk of touring time and entertainment time there in the evening with them if you're staying, you know, right next to the park there.
Yeah. Particularly if you've got younger children and you know that you're going to have to go back and rest or do things. I mean, both the Disneyland hotel, all the hotels there are very convenient, but the Disneyland hotel and really the Grand Californian are so convenient. It makes it much easier to go back if you need to take an hour rest in the middle of the day so that the kids can come back strong and do stuff late into the evening.
It does also add if you, it's just so much easier to go through security check through the private entrance in Grand California and then through the main plaza. So, you know, you start your day off going in through, and it doesn't matter. You don't have to be staying at the California. If you stay at any of the Disney hotels, you can use that private entrance. That's another benefit if you happen to stay there, is it creates a quicker and easier start to your day.
Yeah, now I will say that my experience with that was actually kind of mixed. I think that the secret of the Grand Californian backdoor entrance is kind of out, and it may be suffering from popularity, because the downside to going through security there is that they've got about a third as many or less people there doing the bag checks. And it's become a popular entrance, so it can back up there trying to get through. It's kind of a luck of the draw. Maybe you got lucky and it wasn't as busy a day, but our experience was, like I said, kind of mixed.
I've never had a problem going through there any time of day, so maybe you just got unlucky?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I wouldn't have called it a problem. It just wasn't like it was an express lane.
Yeah, I think the important thing to understand here, and that does get out. Sometimes people think, well, this one's, don't mean to make it sound that way. You don't go there and you just like walk straight through. But how many times have I been there now and used that entrance, man? You know, a lot. There's been a couple of times where I actually thought, well, this is crazy. That line's too long. Hurry up, everybody, hustle. We're going to go through downtown Disney, and got over to the other place. And it was, if it's busy at one, invariably it's busy at the other. And the difference,
that's a good point too.
30 people, 40, 50 people waiting in line, as opposed to, yeah, there's a bunch of lines, but it's just mass mayhem. So, but it is true. And thank you for saying that, because one thing people should understand about that private entrance, bottom line, it isn't a freebie. I mean, it's not a guaranteed in quick. If you show up 2 minutes before rope drop, you're going to get behind a line. It's just like with the other rope drop. You can't get there at the last second and think you're going to just walk right to the front gate and be the first one in. It's just not going to happen. You need to get there a little early. But yeah.
All right. So I think we covered most of what we wanted to cover. I want to throw out one last quick scenario just to get some feedback on what you think. Because we get this question sometimes. It pops up on Facebook or in the boards where somebody says, I've got a business meeting in California and, you know, I can justify flying in the day before, but the soonest I can get in is the flight will land at noon. So is it worth it to pay $100 for the 1 day ticket if I'm really only going to have a half day in the parks? And I'm just curious what your guys' impressions are. Do you think it would be worth it? And what would you do? What would you prioritize to make sure it was worth it? And I'll have Brad try first.
Okay. Then my response is duh. But that's kind of a tricky question, because for guys like us we're just such Disney addicts that, yeah, the value's there. I mean, to me, yeah, that's a lot of money to spend for half a day, but kind of thinking of doing Disney and making it into a bargain is just kind of a fleeting thought. Whether you're there all day or a half a day, it's ridiculously expensive if you're thinking in those terms. So I would still do it, but it really comes down to what was mentioned earlier on. Figure out what it is that you enjoy and do that. We talked a lot about the fact that at Disneyland, you get so many of the locals that come on annual passports. The way you do Disneyland on a half day is like they do it. They come there and they've decided ahead, you know what? I want to go do this and this, this trip, because that's really what I want to see. That's what I'm in the mood for. And so it might be different this time than it is next time, but figure out in advance. Do not go in that park and say, well, I'm going to go figure out what I'm going to go do. Decide ahead what it is you want to do, a couple of things, and then go do those, and then fill it in with enjoying the moments, enjoying the experiences, and enjoying the atmosphere. But I would absolutely do it without even blinking an eyelid.
Okay. And how about you, Kevin? Would you do that?
I have done it. So I was in Ontario for the podcast convention a long time ago with my wife, and we thought, you know what? We want to see the Halloween decorations at Disneyland. It was an hour away. We did it. We paid for the park hopper. We just went through there. Like Brad was saying, we wanted to go in there with a specific purpose to see either maybe something new or to see some specific attraction or decorations like for the holidays. And that was fine. And now you're not using your money wisely if you do that, but it can be worth it to you if you choose to do that. I think in this scenario, you might want to consider whether you could have a fun time doing the stuff in the resort that doesn't involve a theme park ticket. Trader Sam's, Downtown Disney, hanging around the hotels and looking around and maybe doing some of the restaurants or whatever. You could still have a lot of fun without those theme park tickets.
All right. Yeah, that's a good point. And I think in some ways, Disney Springs is helping Walt Disney World kind of catch up on that front. But I think that until recently, Disneyland has sort of had the lead on that area. All right. So what about you, Ryan?
So I think like most people that are probably listening to this podcast, I'm going to be agree with the two other guys and say, yeah, it's definitely worth it. I think there are a couple. If I were doing a half day trip, I think both Kevin and Brad have mentioned that the afternoons are crowded. So go into it expecting that you're going to be dealing with potentially longer lines. You may have an hour or two when you first land or first get in the park where it's not that bad, but it's going to pick up. And that might temper the way that the way that I try and do things. So if I think I'm going to come back again, I might be a little more narrowly focused and not do a park hopper and not try and do Cars Land. If I was only going to be there for the 1 day, I would probably try and be a little bit more commando and probably rush and try and do more things. If I know that I'm going to be back and I know that it's going to be crowded, the other thing that I might do is make a dinner reservation at some place like Blue Bayou. So if I know enough time in advance, I would call and make that to say, all right, I know that I'm going to be there. I know it's going to be crowded. I know I have a million things that I'm going to want to do, but Blue Bayou or restaurants like that are very unique dining experiences. And so why not take the time on a solo trip to experience something like that too. That's something that I don't think we brought up before, at least during this podcast. And that's one of the things that I would probably change in my half day trip. Just say, look, all right, I don't need to rush the whole time. By the time six o'clock comes around, I'll be bushed from rushing around. So I want a spot. I'll force myself to sit down for an hour and eat a nice meal and then go off and do other cool stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. Go ahead.
Can I mention one thing with that?
Sure, sure.
That's a good point because that brings up one thing that's important to remember. The tendency is to rush into a park and think you got to go make sure you get in your favorite things and rush to them. If you're coming in the middle of the day, the smart thing is with those bigger, more popular rides isn't to necessarily rush to them. I understand that as it gets to the end of the day, the lines and the things for a lot of lines like Space Mountain. How many times, guys, have we gone in there and then as we're getting ready to leave the park, we say, let's go do Space Mountain real fast, you know, and actually the line's only 10, 15 minutes, you know, instead of 50. So yeah, kind of sometimes you can keep the bigger things till a little bit later in the night and not rush to go do them right away because you're going to burn a lot of time waiting in line.
Yeah. And I mean, I know from personal experience that in those rush trips, I'll forego everything to do rides. And so I almost need to force myself to say, all right, you have to have an established time to have a break because after 7 hours of walking around and standing in line and doing things, even though they're really exciting, you're going to be hungry and potentially hot and tired and frustrated and irritated. So that hour break midway through can make it so that you can enjoy the whole time and stay a lot longer and enjoy that entire period of time.
Yeah, that's a really good point because there's a tendency to, like you said, you know, just kind of pull out all the stops, go really hard the whole time and burn yourself out basically to the point where you aren't ultimately able to, enjoy the evening. Yeah, by the time you force yourself to, or your body forces you to get some dinner and it's, you know, 9, 10 o'clock, you know, it's almost too late.
Yeah.
Yeah. And remember still, even if it's you're coming in midday, FastPass is still your friend. And if you're sitting around for another hour before your FastPass, that might be a good time to take that break and just relax for that time.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, any last thoughts here before we wrap up?
Well, it's interesting this topic because my wife and my kids actually basically did this thing. They were talking about because my wife wanted to see the Christmas decorations and they all wanted to check out the new Star Wars things that were in the park. And I couldn't go because I have work stuff. And so they went and basically they did like a 1 day thing. And they went in, they wanted to do the new Star Wars. They wanted to see the new Space Mountain. Star Wars overlays and do that stuff, take pictures of the decorations. That's exactly what they did. They had their specific things that they wanted to do and then whatever else was gravy and they had a great time.
Yeah. And that's a really great example of the way you can maximize even a partial day trip. Is to say, you know, this is the one thing that's really important to me that I want to focus on. And it could be a lot of different things. It could be, you know, I want to see what they've done with the Star Wars stuff. So I want to ride Hyperspace Mountain. I want to do Star Tours. I want to, you know, check out the Launch Bay meet and greets. And that can be your focus. And you can get a lot done all within that focus and have a really great day out of it. It could also just be, you know what, I want to go and hit all of the Fantasyland attractions that are unique to Disneyland. Right, that I don't see at Walt Disney World, and you can spend your afternoon on Peter Pan and Alice in Wonderland and Pinocchio and all these things that are only available there at Disneyland.
Mr. Toad,
there you go, Mr. Toad, another good example. Or it could even be if you're somebody who really feels the need to do the head-to-head comparisons, you can pick your 5 favorite attractions that are available both places and prioritize those because that's what you want to do. You want to ride Pirates so that you can compare it to Pirates. You want to ride Space, so you can compare it to Space. You want to do Tower of Terror, so you can compare it to Tower of Terror. I don't know that I would recommend that, but I know that for some people, that's really one of the things that they think about when they want to consider a Disneyland trip.
Well, maybe if you're there by yourself, maybe that's the thing you've always wanted to do and your family wouldn't let you. So maybe that would be an option, right?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
There you go. I think the one thread that keeps going for all of us and that is that sense of make sure on a one-day trip or a half-day trip, whether it's with your family or by yourself, don't go into it with a mindset of this is the only time I'm ever going to see. In fact, let's just say this. If this is the only time you're ever going to go to Disneyland and you're just trying to do a one-day trip, you may want to just save your money. You're going to kill yourself because you're going to try to do it all. And you just can't. Have intention and purpose. Figure out what it is that'll make this an enjoyable trip. Do that. Then you've got a little extra time. Fill it in. If you don't, then you did what you wanted and you had a great day.
Yep. I think that's a great point. So you've heard our ideas, most of the panel's ideas, for how to do a one-day whirlwind Disneyland trip. We'd love to hear from you. What do you suggest? What have you experienced? You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com. Visit our blog, dizdads.com. Tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter and participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/dizdadspodcast. And remember, next week we'll be coming to you live at 7 p.m. Central Time over on diztalkradio.com. The chat room there is up and running now, and you can stream the audio right there from that page. We'll be talking more about whirlwind touring, but this time in the East Coast context, talking about whirlwind touring at Walt Disney World. But until then, I've been Aaron Ripmaster with Brad Coates.
Thanks for letting us spend some time with you.
Kevin Crossman.
Aloha, everyone.
And Ryan Tryquin.
The West Coast Space Mountain is the best. Good night, everybody.
Yeah.